guys.
Shasi, can you hear us?
No.
I'm just gonna.
One second. Yep,
sorry.
Sorry, no, try.
Shasi, can you hear us?
Possible.
Shasi?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll shoot you.
All right, I'm gonna bring, call to order our work session for Tuesday, January 23rd, 2024. In our first case up tonight, we've got the Anoka County Assessor Property Value Evaluation Process. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening. Thanks for having me. I did put together a presentation. Most of you should have a copy of it. There's a lot of text I've got. I promise I won't read a lot through it, but I left more text in there just so if you have questions, you can refer back to it later. My name is Alex Gruberger. I'm the county assessor in Anoka. I've been at the county for about 12 years. I've not actually been to, I don't know if I've been to one or two of your guys' council meetings in my 12 years at the county. But know that if you guys ever have questions or you want, us to come out and take a look.
Can you give me your last name again?
Guggenberger.
How do you spell it?
G-U-G-G-E-N-B-E-R-G-E-R.
Where it sounds.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So I've been there for about 12 years and been county assessor since 2016. But I'm more than willing to come out to any council meetings that you guys have or anything like that. If you ever do have questions in the future, know that that's always an option. Beginning of the PowerPoint here, I'm going to kind of walk through just a brief overview of the assessment process, how we go about valuing property. After that, I'm going to talk a little bit about what values have done over the last 10 years, and then with the 2023 assessment for taxes payable in 24, which is likely where you guys got most of your questions from after TNT. Then I'll, at the very end, I'll talk about the 2024 assessment that we're working on wrapping up right now. Within the next 2 weeks, we'll have those values pretty much finalized and ready to go for value notice time. Getting to the first slide here, what is the difference? That's a big question we generally get. What's the difference between assessment and appraisal? So assessment, is a different form of appraisal. It's just referred to as mass appraisal. And typically, it's specifically for ad valorem tax purposes. Another type of mass appraisal that most people don't think about is the Zillows, the Redfins, the Realtors.com. When they're generating that value, they're doing a similar process to what we do. It's just they don't do it for tax purposes. They're buying our data and then plugging it into their algorithm to generate the value. Appraisal is different in that it's generally for a specific purpose as of a certain time that can be retrospective, it can be prospective, figuring out what that value is going to be when a building is done. That scope of work is very specific to that assignment that they get. And Minnesota statute actually outlines the framework that we work within, and that's where it says the systematic appraisal of groups of properties as of any given date using standardized process and testing. So while it's the assessment process is appraisal, it is different than your typical fee appraisal. We kind of wear two hats as assessors. During our normal assessment process, we are assessors. Once that value is set and value notices go out, property owners start calling us, we kind of put on our individual appraiser hats. Mass appraisal is great when you have a ton of sales. Our residential property values in the county are great because we have thousands of sales in which to go through and statistically separate out. It's a lot harder when you get to commercial, industrial, and you have, in commercial, you've got office, you've got retail, you've got restaurant. Well, the sales that are happening in office don't necessarily reflect what's happening in retail at this point in time. So it's a lot harder of a target to hit from that perspective. And I'll kind of get into that here on the next page. So statute requires that we physically view every property once every 5 years. It's six for exempt, but we just keep them all on the same schedule. So we're viewing exempt and non-exempt parcels once every 5 years. We then revalue every parcel every single year. So the data that we collect once every 5 years is relied upon for that next five-year cycle. Unless permits are pulled, the property is sold, and we have to verify that information. We verify the sales data on every commercial, industrial, and apartment sale. So we have to physically call or try to get a hold of someone. A lot of times people aren't looking to call us back when we reach out to them. Sometimes we do, get people answering our calls, but every commercial industrial sale is reviewed for whether or not it's included in our study purposes or excluded for certain reasons. So that revaluation happens every single year as of January 2nd. So that's the specified date piece from the last slide. January 2nd every year is our assessment date. So when our value notices go out, that's our value, our estimate of value for as of January 2nd of that year. And then property owners pay taxes on that value the following year. So we're setting our values long before you guys ever go through the budgeting process. We adjust that assessment each year then based on the sales ratio analysis. And I've got that highlighted because I'm going to kind of outline what that process is on the next slides. Because that really is kind of the nuts and bolts of our mass appraisal system here in the state of Minnesota. I also put in there's no restriction on how much a property value can go up or down. That's a really common question we get a lot is, isn't there something in statute that says my value can only go up 2% or 10% in any given year? That's not true. The value can do whatever it is. We are required to value at market. So if it's really low for 1 or 3 or 4 years by mistake or, you know, whatever reasons, that's, there's nothing that stops it, the value from resetting every single year. The only caveat to that is newly platted parcels. There is a statute that allows those part of that value to phase in over a 3-year period, as long as it's not sold or built upon. That's actually 7 years outside of the metro. It's 3 years in the metro area. We then classify each parcel to, it's not really the point of this discussion here, but we classify property according to its use. Vacant land, generally that our classification always is going to look at highest and best use. That's the same type of analysis that the appraiser is going to do. Vacant land is going to be dictated a lot on zoning. It's going to kind of dictate what that classification is. When a property is approved, it doesn't always have to match. You know, our classification might not always match what the underlying zoning is of a particular property. Sometimes people will call and say, well, they're illegally using this property because it's classified residential, but it's a commercial. It's in the commercial zoning area. That's really not, our classification and zoning are not tied to one another. So just keep that in mind, because sometimes property owners will get that twisted around a little bit. Getting to the sales ratio study. So statute requires that our median sale price in any given study be between 90 and 105%. So by median, that means they array them smallest to largest, and then that midpoint must fall between 90 and 105%. Typically in this county, we are aiming is 93 to 95%. The reason we don't aim at 100 is because if you think of a normal bell curve, that puts half of your parcels overvalued and half of your parcels undervalued. We want to try to mitigate as many phone calls as we can, and try to be fair to the property owner. So aiming at 93 to 95 puts more properties under 100%, but still within that requirement. The property types that the state looks at are residential, apartment, commercial, industrial, and agricultural. Those are 5 big buckets. But keep in mind, the state of Minnesota has the most complex tax system in the nation when it comes to property classifications. So we have close to 64 individual property classifications, like I talked about on the last page, that last piece. We have 64 individual property classifications. The next closest state has 12. So there's a bunch of special legislation for very small numbers of parcels across the state, which makes valuing our properties that much more difficult. And it can make it more unfair because you have like properties sitting across the street from each other paying different rates of tax. The values might be very close, but what they're paying in tax can be wildly different, which is not something we necessarily get into, but we have to answer those questions from property owners when they are calling. So as far as the sales ratio study is concerned, the state breaks our sales down into 3 distinct studies, and they each have their own. We have a 9-month study that the tax court uses almost exclusively. I'm not going to get into that one a whole lot. It's the other two that really impact what we do with values on any given year. We have our 12-month study, and the dates that I list there are actually the dates for the 2024 assessment. So what we're working on right now is going to be based on sales that took place from October 1st of 2022 through September 30th of 2023. So typically, we're always lagging behind the market a little bit in any given year. And that's kind of how it was historic, probably 10, 15 years ago, probably 15 years ago closer. They were always a good 10, 12 months behind the market. They made a change in 2010 or 11, which relied more upon that 21-month study. So that 21-month study, which is sales from January 1st of 2022 through September 30th of 2023, they're using all of those sales to calculate what's called a market conditions adjustment or a trend. You know, what is the market doing over a significant amount of time? And then from there, they use that to forecast what a sale would have been as of the assessment date. And that's kind of where my example comes in there. So the sales in the 12-month study are being trended forward based on the trends that are calculated in the 21-month study. So the example there, a home that sold in March, and this is actually a real sale that happened in Ramsey. A home sold in March of 2023 for $375,000. The trend that the state calculated for the residential properties that are not on water in Ramsey was just under 1% annually. They then take that, because it had statistical significance and there's enough sales in Ramsey for that trend to be applied, and they then forecast that sale price forward. So as of January 2nd, it might have sold in March for $375,000. The state's belief is that as of January 2nd, 2024, it really should be worth $378,000. Not as big of a deal when you have very small trends, but depending on the property type that you're working with, that trend can vary mildly. With residential, it really doesn't vary a whole lot. Most of our cities are pretty consistent from that perspective because we have so many sales. Where it really can get wild is in the commercial, industrial, and apartment type areas. And then from there, they group them different as well. The reason I say off-water there is they also look at your on-water trends. And you probably got calls about that last year, or if any of you happen to live on the river, either the Rum or the Mississippi in Ramsey, you probably saw a larger increase for 2023, pay 24 than other off-water properties. In our particular case, the state looks at all of our on-water properties the same. So whether you're...
I'm just going to clarify. When you're talking about off-water versus on-water, you're talking about a body of water.
A body of water.
Not in MUSA.
Not in MUSA. Okay. Yes, sorry. Yes, on a body of water. Yep. Great. And so when we're verifying those sales, the state will include certain things like some swamps and sloughs. Well, to me, those types of sales don't necessarily impact what's happening on Coon Lake or what's happening on the river. So we have some control over what gets in the water study versus the off-water study. But they don't differentiate between what's river versus lake. You know, and I would say that Coon Lake or George are very, very different than certain parts of the Mississippi. And you get north of Anoka, the river changes a lot. You know, so it's on water is always a little bit more tricky. Just like the commercial, industrial, and apartment, each one is slightly different. So when we get to some of that stuff, we do a lot of work looking at trends. So the trends that we get, we are looking at, we have the ability, the state calculates them starting in September, and then we start seeing our initial trend calculations. We then have an opportunity to appeal. So what happened for 22 pay 23 is we ended up with really, really large industrial preliminary trends of close to 30 or 40% trend based on that 21-month study. Had we not appealed, we ended up appealing to the state, much like the rest of the metro did, and got that appeal down into the 20s. But had we not appealed, you would have saw industrial values in most of our cities in Anoka County go up anywhere from 50 to 60%, just largely because of that trend. Now, the market was really good before January 2nd, 2023, when interest rates were low, that their industrial properties were probably the hottest item on the market. But that making sure the trend is right before we go into adjusting values is vital to what we do. Otherwise, we're going to overshoot or undershoot values in any given year. That also doesn't take into account rapidly changing markets, because we're looking at that 21-month study. In years where the market crashes, in 2006 or 7, market was humming along really, really good. Market crashed. Within a matter of a month or two, the market was really bad. In situations like this, if that were to happen in November, before December, we would have to change our process and argue to this, because the state's going to look at it kind of a black and white lens, and they're going to say, this is what your trend is 20%. We might then turn around and say, well, the market just crashed. Here's our reasoning why we don't think you should have a trend. We spend a lot of time every single year going through the different trends that get applied to commercial, industrial, apartment, and residential properties. And you'll see here, that, you know, when I talk about commercial, industrial, apartment, we weren't alone as far as our appeal last year, and even this year we appealed our commercial trend for the 24 assessment. But you can see kind of metro-wide how that is fairly consistent around the metro. Do you guys have any questions about the sales ratio study? That's a very, very high level look at what that is, but it is, that's a complex thing, and that is really what we're paid to do from that perspective.
When you're talking about it, you made a comment that made it sound like that the trends come from the state.
They do.
So that's not a county thing.
That's a statewide.
You have the ability to appeal, but it's not something like you don't do that kind of math.
We do that kind of, yes. So we will calculate our own trends as well. So while the state's calculating their trends, we're also doing our own analysis of that trend and going through to say, okay, this is where the state's at. How come we're at 5%?
Got it.
And when we put those appeals together, it's not just we disagree with this. We have to go through and put together, you know, I think our appeal this year was 30 or 40 pages long of an analysis saying, this, you know, this is where you guys are at. This is what we see from third-party market reports, from paired sales, properties that sold multiple times within that same window. You can track the sale price. If nothing's really changed on that property, it sold for $1 million 19 months ago, and then 8 months later it sold again, and it only had a 2% increase. That's an indication that the market only went up 2% instead of 18%. So there's a lot of work that goes into those appeals, but it's, the state really does look at it from a black and white lens. And one of the arguments from a commercial industrial, it's a little different with residential just because someone looking in Ramsey might only be looking at Ramsey. So for the most part, our larger cities, that's its own little trend area. Commercial industrial, depending on the property type, you might be looking at the likely buyer might be a REIT or something that's a nationwide type buyer, which is a totally different market pool than your local investor. With that, the state does recognize the fact that those commercial industrial bound, you know, markets extend beyond county borders. So that's a lot of our appeals is looking at it and saying, okay, some of our jurisdictions in the county overlap in both counties, in Oakland and Ramsey. If they apply a really large industrial trend on the city of Blaine and they don't apply it to the same part of Blaine in Ramsey County, you could end up with the same property on either side of the road being valued. They might be the identical buildings, one valued $30, $40 more per square foot, purely because the trend was inaccurate. So we work very closely with our other county counterparts in the metro to make sure that the trends that are being applied are consistent and make sense. With that, I'm going to kind of get into the assessment timeline a little bit more. So like I said, January 2nd is our assessment every single year. Our assessment date every year, mid-March, our value notices go out with our tax statements. A lot of people just kind of seem to forget about the value notice. They just look right at, you know, which I don't blame them. Most people look at what the bottom dollar is, what they're going to pay in taxes this particular year. But that blue notice is really that cut. It's always blue. That blue notice is really the opportunity, us telling, notifying property owners, this is what we think your property is worth. If you disagree with this property value, give us a call. We're happy to take. We do our best to educate property owners to really pay attention to that blue notice. Anywhere from 95 to 98% of all value disputes can be handled in an informal manner during that point in time during the year. Once it gets after local board or open book meetings or even county board of appeal, our options are really limited as far as what we can do to change property values because they're trying to be fair to all properties.
That's when those come out again?
Usually mid-March, mid to end of March. And you guys are an open book city, so I would argue that your residents have more opportunity to appeal than other cities that have local board meetings. Those cities that have local boards, if property owners miss appealing at the local board of appeal and equalization, their appeal options are done. So I'm going to use Coon Rapids as an example. If someone misses the Coon Rapids date this year, which I'll use Andover actually. If they miss the Andover date, which happens to be April 8th, if our notices go out the end of March, that gives them a week and a half to call and appeal their value to us informally. And then if they miss appealing their value at the local board date in early April, they have no more appeal options. They can't go to the County Board of Appeal. They can't take anything further. Whereas residents in Ramsey, they can call us day of the County Board of Appeal in June, or they can just walk in day of and appeal their value. So your residents are getting more opportunity to appeal on a longer time frame to appeal than some of the other cities that have local board meetings. But that's probably the most fair to property owners, because not everyone, someone might be on vacation for the week that, you know, in between when they get their notice and when the local board meeting. So it's the state setup really does kind of treat property owners any differently there as far as appeal options go. But we really do our best to try to work with property owners. And that's when we take off our assessor hat and we put on our appraiser hats. And I always tell our staff, if you go look at that property, and at that point in time you're looking at individual sales for that particular, you know, comparable sales for that property, and you feel that that value is not right, I have no problem if they want to change that value. As long as they can support a value reduction or whatever that, you know, or whatever, as long as they can support the revised value that they're coming up with current sales, the assessed value does not matter to me. I want to make sure that's a fair process. It's never punitive. We're never going to come out and take a look at it and then raise someone's property value either. Some people will think, well, I just won't let you out because I don't want you to raise my value. We don't want that process to be punitive. We were there to help property owners. So we really do encourage property owners to call. So if you are getting calls from constituents, please have them call us. We will definitely be able to come take a look. And we do our best to be as fair as possible. Property taxes are then due in May 15th. The County Board of Appeal is generally in June. It was June 12th. This year it'll be again mid-June this year. Second half taxes are due for regular properties, ag properties, in November 15th. And then truth of taxation notices go out in November. Yeah, that's likely what generated most of your guys' calls this year, is the commercial industrial property values. And actually, it's probably the commercial industrial taxes, which also then had a number of items that go into that. It's always the value, the different levies at the city, county, and school district levels, but also the shift between the values, shift between the different property types. And that really gets to kind of the next couple of slides. So this just shows a value history of what's happened since 2006. So you can see, you know, as of like 2016-17, we eclipsed the 2006 peak, and then now since then we've just kind of gotten way above and beyond that.
Babs, could you explain to me on the when you're doing your evaluations, if you have more than six properties in the same,
yep.
Can you talk about that?
Yep, I'll get to that here in just a second. That gets back to the sales ratio analysis. So with residential properties, it's really 30. The minimum sales is 30 in order to have a trend. For commercial industrial, you have to have, if you have six, I should clarify too, the state classifies them as commercial industrial. They're all 3A. They all pay the same 2% class rate. For sales ratio purposes, the state requires us to break those out to look at commercial and industrial separately. So if any city has more than six commercial and six industrial, they're what they call standalone, in that they ratio on their own. So for the 23 pay 24 assessment, Ramsey had more than six qualified commercial sales and they had more than six qualified industrial sales. It doesn't happen all that often in Ramsey. Blaine is probably our most impacted city there because they generally do eclipse, you know, that number. When you stand alone, those six sales are what you're based on, not the other sales that happen. So it makes life a lot harder for us, because when we're valuing all the properties, we know that the market extends beyond Ramsey. Those looking to build in Ramsey are likely looking to build in Andover or Blaine or, you know, somewhere else too. But the state's only kind of putting their goggles on looking at just Ramsey and those six sales. Last year that required us to add an additional factor to Ramsey and to Blaine in order to get the median ratio above 90%. Had we not added an additional factor, what we did, the median ratio for commercial industrial properties, you know, industrial specifically, would have been 88% or 89%, which is fine when value notices go out. Property owners see it. They're not upset by the value. What happens then, though, is the State Board of Equalization happens after County Board. That happens in, like, August or July, you know, end of June, probably early July, is when the State Board of Appeal happens. They increase value. They look at those ratio reports, and if you fall below 90, they make their adjustments in 5% increments. So we could ratio at maybe 91 or 2 for those properties with the factors that we added in Ramsey and Blaine. The state's going to look at it and say, okay, you guys are ratioing at 88 or 89%. We need to add 5%. And then on top of that, we're going to look at the last 5 years of sales, and it looks like a couple of those sales might be a little low too. We're going to add, instead of adding 5, we're going to add 10%. So that happened to us in Blaine a number of years ago, where they added an additional 10% to all property values after all appeal options are done. So in July, we had to send letters out to all the industrial property owners saying, your value was $1 million. Now it's $1.1 million. If you want to appeal, you can file a tax court petition, you know, which is going to cost money on the, you know, so we always want to make sure that we are doing our part early so that property owners can call an appeal and it's not costing them money to appeal, versus letting the state come through and make a state board increase after the fact. So that's really where the six sales comes into play. This year, it's not going to impact Ramsey. There's not enough sales in both. It has to be in both studies. So you guys will ratio with the rest of the county this year. Even Blaine, I think, is ratioing with the rest of the county this particular year. So it will be less of an impact this year. And actually, with the factors that got applied to your two cities the last year, those come off every year. So we don't leave those on. You know, yours came off. So really, when we pulled those factors off, your commercial industrial values dropped more than the other counties did when it kind of hit the reset button, or more than the other cities did. So when we've changed some of our industrial values now, where other cities might be seeing 3 or 4% increases, Ramsey's flat. Your industrial values are flat because you had a factor last year. It'll look a little different comparing one to the other, but you really have to get down to the value per square foot. And that's really where it can be equalized for like properties. So I don't envision the values being as big of a deal this next assessment. This next page, the one that talks about value by class, this is what I'm talking about when I talk about the shift from of value from residential to commercial. In 2010 and prior to that, residential properties made up about 82% of the taxable value. The rest, commercial industrial, was kind of the rest. Since then, with the slow, steady, and then rapidly increasing residential market, that shifted the tax burden to residential because they became a bigger piece of the pie. So while industrial values were increasing, the taxes weren't increasing at the same rate because residential was picking up more of that burden. So for 2023, you saw residential all the way up at 87.5%. They made up 87.5% of our overall tax bucket, so to speak, and commercial industrial was the rest. For the 23, page 24 assessment, residential values stayed relatively flat for the most part, but industrial and commercial values shot up a lot. So then you actually saw, instead of 87%, residential only made up 84% of the overall tax bucket. Well, that's 3% of our total tax burden that now, instead of getting spread over 114,000 residential parcels, is now being spread out over 4,500 commercial industrial properties, which means that, while it's not as big a deal for the residential because there's so many more parcels to spread that tax burden out to, the commercial industrial property has got value increases, they got levy increases, and on top of that, their piece of the pie got a lot bigger too. So that's why they're seeing such large tax increases. And that's really not going to, that's not going to end this year. The legislative changes that they made last April, or last year, changed the homestead exclusion for single family homes. So right now, if you have a homestead property, your homestead exclusion maxes out at $413,800. Still homestead, it's just you don't get a CLO credit on there. That now changed, where the max is now $517,200. So there's a whole big chunk of residential value that's now going to start receiving exclusion, meaning it's not going to be taxed anymore. So right out of the chute, without us ever valuing properties and without you guys ever setting your levies, the commercial property bucket is getting bigger, barring any legislative changes this year that might be effective for next year. So for Pay 26, we've been trying to tell property owners, especially the commercial industrial ones, you might, your value might stay flat, but your taxes might go up next year, even if your guys' levy is zero or minimal, just because that is shifting the tax burden again back towards commercial industrial property owners. I don't know if the legislature intended that to be the case, but that is what's going to happen with that particular piece of legislation. Again, this is just more of a, what happened with the next page, just talks about overall taxable values for payable 2023. You can see residential went up a minimal amount, around 3%, but that's commercial industrial at 29. That really reflects a really large industrial value, and then a lesser, that's the combination of the two. And you can kind of see that on the how did we compare slide.
What's the percent increase due to NC? What is NC?
That's new construction.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. And so new construction is not new buildings. New construction is better term. State calls it new construction. It's more new improvement. So okay. Even if that's including buildings that existed previously that just got added on to. So the numbers can be slightly misleading. Sometimes people look at that and say that's all brand new construction. It's really not. That's really a better term. The next slide on your paper, you're going to see all four of the different values. But when you look at commercial, you can see kind of Anoka, Washington, Dakota. Anoka, Washington, Scott had very similar commercial changes for the payable 2024, you know, some 23 assessment. Yeah, sorry, they show up all on the printed version, but they come scattered later on. And then in industrial, you can see Anoka had the highest, which is not all that unusual. Given the large amount of development we've had, Ramsey's seen a lot of that development, and just this overall sales volume. But Washington was also very high in Scott County as well. So those are value increases with appealing the trend down to 22 or 3%. Like I said, the initial trends were closer to 35 or 40%. So that number would be closer to 40 or 45, 50 if we didn't appeal the trend. And at the end of the day, it's really could they sell the property for that? In a lot of the cases, we're finding that maybe the properties, our values did not raise fast enough in prior assessments. I would say right now, and that's kind of what I'm talking about, the last slide is talking about the 24 assessment. Residential is relatively flat to going down. Our on-water properties, we'll see a reduction, a larger reduction this year because of that smaller sample set that they had in prior years. Their values went up more than they probably should have last year, too. Apartments going to stay relatively flat with some of our larger complexes seeing some decreases. I think some of our larger units we have overvalued right now, they're being impacted a lot by the larger interest rates that you're seeing. So that's affecting the cap rates on some of those deals. Industrial will be relatively flat with some types of property maybe seeing a decrease while others are going to see an increase. It's really going to be kind of a mixed bag. We're still seeing a really strong market for our storage warehouse type property. Those seem to be transacting just fine still. Even some of the really small ones that you might have look at, just drive by and go, you know, it's kind of an ugly property. They are selling for still quite a bit of money. And then same with commercial. And that's such a mixed bag between office, retail, restaurant. Office, you're probably going to see drop. Retail is probably going to go up slightly depending on the property type. We don't necessarily know exactly where we're going to end up on those numbers yet, but we will have those here in the next 2 to 3 weeks for sure. Do you guys have questions about what happened in the grants specifically for the 24 assessment? For 23 assessment? Again, if you guys do have questions, I do offer to come out and talk to them. Especially those communities that have open book meetings, they don't necessarily need to see us. Whereas when they have a local book meeting, we're there with the local book meeting or local board meetings. We're there talking to them, presenting value changes to those. So if you want, you guys can certainly reach out and I can come out and give a presentation. This is what happened with the 2024 assessment. It gives us an opportunity to kind of get in front of your guys' council or in a public meeting to then have property owners reach out and call us. Just kind of never happened.
I think it's been really, really helpful. I appreciate being here.
Just to kind of add to that, we do plan on putting, summarizing this half an hour discussion down into, you know, probably about a half page, you know, the process and putting that in our upcoming edition of the newsletter, which comes out in March. So right before that open meeting and really nail down what that process is. So hopefully residents or property owners know that December, when we're setting our budget levy, is not the time to come and talk about the value. It was 7 months ago. So.
And we still try to talk to property owners with that. It's, you know, some counties will say that you don't have that option, but we do make every effort to go out and take a look at those properties that late in the game. But the county's also working on the newsletter, they have a quarterly newsletter. There's going to be a section there of all values, what's happening in this county too. So we are trying to get ahead of that to make sure property owners know what to do.
Ms. Musgrove.
Thank you, Mayor. Alex, thank you for presentation, but also thank you at the county for being proactive with businesses trying to ward off that 5% or 10% increase by being proactive with whatever kind of increase you can incrementally do for businesses. I have a question on assessments where, so I had an assessment, but because somebody had been in doing it wrong for 4 or 5 years, it jumped up right away. So how internally do you guys check or track that kind of stuff where, you know, a resident is assured that, you know, their property is being assessed accurately year after year after year versus just, hey, this is the same kind of thing. We're just going to do it the same.
Yep. And
you
then
can
so that
talk that a little bit.
Yeah, I certainly can. So some of that had to do with former old, you know, former processes that were in place. There are certain situations where you need to add a certain reduction that's valid, and we call that obsolescence. That might be the strike, you know, the easiest is to think of a house. If I have to walk through a bedroom to get to a bedroom, that's a functional obsolescence. So that's the market's not going to react to that as favorably, so they're going to reduce, you know, they can add a line item to reduce that value. What we started seeing when we were doing our sales ratio analysis is we're expecting the values to move 4 or 5%. We make our change and we would see kind of a shotgun blast. Some properties would go up 4 or 5% like we would expect, others would go up 10, 15, and when we boiled down and dug into that a little bit more, it was obsolescence that was being added for a number of years, up to almost 10 years, that was never getting removed. You know, and some of that was just they were adding up property owner call, unhappy with their value. They didn't add, I had an obsolescence on it to get that kind of call to go away. Well, then that obsolescence would sit out there for the next 5, 6 years. So we are now way more aware of those obsolescences and we're reviewing them. And anyone that's not tied to a note, we remove. So we've changed some of the internal processes that were in place for a long time to where those are not going to be happening. Obsolescence will only be allowed in cases where there's a valid note that's in place. Because we really shouldn't be changing future years because of a tax. You know, some of it was tax court case related. Tax court would come down and adjust the prior year's values. Well, then they'd go up to the future year and add an obsolescence just to lower it down. Well, the market changes over time, and adding that obsolescence might not be valid in those particular cases. So that's really what we ran into, not just in Ramsey, but we ran into that countywide. Blaine saw large increases. Columbus saw large increases. Andover saw large increases. You know, so we do have the processes in place to make sure that doesn't happen.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, moving on to case number two is the Nova County Housing Study. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I have some details of my presentation. My name is Karen Skepper. I've been here many times. I know many of you, but I'm the director of Community and Government Relations. I'm also the Executive Director of the County HRA. Been at the county for 23 years, lots and lots of history working with our partner communities. About every decade, the HRA undertakes a countywide housing study, just so we really understand what's happening, not just with the rental communities, but with single family, anything that's got to do with housing. We did get a couple of years behind because of COVID, but this past year we had Maxfield Research do an update to our study. We did one major change. In the past several studies we've done, we broke the county into regions. This last, 10 years ago or 12 years ago, it was like 5 different regions. This year we thought every city has different trends. Let's break it out and give you specific city information. So this is the first time we've done that. My final slides will have some specific thoughts that Maxfield had for your community. Use it as a guide if you choose. If not, you are the policymakers. We're just trying to provide you with some information. Do you want me just to speak? And
I will try to keep up, and if I'm on the wrong slide, just let me know.
Got it. I printed mine larger, so I'm going to turn my sheet twice for everyone you have to do. The key findings, right on this second slide here, there's been robust household growth in Anoka County and the entire Twin Cities area in the last 12 years since we did another study. No surprise to any business owner or anyone looking to receive services from a business, there's still a labor shortage in many areas. There is a very tight rental market. 5% is considered healthy. For vacancies, right now it's at 2.3%. There's been a dramatic increase in the sale price of homes. Affordability is becoming a bigger and bigger obstacle. A decade ago, we knew affordability was a problem. Right now, I'd say it's almost a crisis. There's a great demand for all kinds of housing, everything from single family to multifamily, small lot cluster type housing, townhomes. There's a need for everything in the county. And my first slides are all about the county in general. Right now, we see that there is demand for over 18,000 new housing units in the county between now and 2030. For housing demand, again, in the whole metro area, everything is pretty much matching up. There's a continued need for the ability to add households, despite the downturn in the economy and the pandemic. Labor shortages are metro-wide, region-wide. There has been strong development of new rental housing in the Anoka County communities. This is the first time we've really been able to see this trend occurring in all areas of the county. Some cities developed multifamily housing a decade ago, but many cities are just now finally jumping on board and doing that type of a development. There's strong demand for affordable units across the county with very limited vacant units. So there's a lot of people competing for those affordable housing units. And general occupancy, which would be anything that's not age restricted, we're seeing a projected demand of over 8,000 units for owner occupied and over 4,500 for rental units between this year and 2030. Anoka County, and I do want to tell you, we also added a little bit of economic development into our housing study because the two are so closely related. So I will talk a little bit about both, flip-flop back and forth. Anoka County is a job exporter, meaning that more people leave the county to go to work than those who stay in the county. We do import some jobs from other counties, but for the most part, we see a lot of our residents leaving to go to work in Hennepin or Ramsey County. The median household income in Anoka County is $90,000 plus, but the average wage in 2022 was $64,200, meaning that our wages just simply aren't keeping up. Our jobs here are not keeping up with median incomes, which helps us define that people really are leaving the county to work and coming back here to spend their money. Rents tend to be lower in Anoka County. There is a big exception. If Alex was here, I'm sure he would agree with me. The price point for new construction, multifamily, that has a luxury component to it, is higher than we've ever seen before, and we're trending right on target with all of the other metro counties. This all boils down to it's really hard for Anoka County workers to find units here that they can live in that are newer. That's why we rely so heavily on our naturally occurring affordable housing and other types of affordable housing, or doubling up, or townhomes, or other types of development rather than just relying on single family. We are seeing households cost burdened to a much greater degree. Cost burdened, if you are familiar with the Department of Housing and Urban Development, they tell us that if you're paying more than 30% of your household income for housing costs, you are cost burdened. In the study, we found that currently 42% of renters are paying more than 30% of their income for housing. 22% of renters are paying more than half of their income for housing, which is making them severely cost burdened. That's a newer phrase. We never used that phrase in previous studies. And renter households that make less than $35,000 a year, 82% of them are cost burdened, and 60% of them are severely cost burdened. So it's becoming harder and harder for our families to afford their housing. For the first time, we're seeing huge numbers of homeowners who are also cost burdened. 18% of the Anoka households that are owned are now cost burdened and paying more than 30% of their household income to maintain their housing. 6% of those home ownership units are severely cost burdened, meaning more than half of their income is going to pay their mortgage and their utilities. And it gets higher as you've got lower income families. If a household is making $50,000 a year, we're seeing those numbers skyrocket to 58% of them being cost burdened at 30% of their income, and 32% are paying more than 50%.
Can I ask a quick
Absolutely.
Question?
Absolutely.
For reference, you said you have done these studies every 10 years or so. What would this equate to a decade ago?
We didn't talk about being severely cost burdened. We were still using 30% as that threshold for being cost burdened. I did not look back at the study, but we maybe had, I would take a guess, but it may be somewhere in the range of probably a 50% increase in the number of cost burdened households.
Wow.
And that's something that I can look into and get back to you on. But we get far more phone calls people looking for housing, and we don't have answers for them. We just don't.
Thank you.
And my final bullet point on this page really sums it up. The solution is we either have to have higher wages or more affordable housing, and neither one of them is something we can fix easily. Affordable housing production is one way that we can start to make the trends match up a little bit better. Currently, throughout Anoka County, there are over 3,000 affordable units that have some sort of an income restriction. And I did a presentation similar to this last night, and a council member stopped me and says, does income restricted mean Section 8? It doesn't. Income restricted means this senior building may look at your income when you are ready to move in, and there may be a threshold of being at 80% of the area median. They only look at it once, but it's still got that one-time income restriction. So this 3,000 units is including the senior housing building we have here in Ramsey, because we do that first-time analysis to make sure that we're serving the right target people that we agreed to when we first constructed. So this tells us there is a need for almost 2,000 additional affordable or subsidized units, and the subsidized would be that deeper amount of subsidy in order to meet the demand that's pent up out there. And this is the demand between now and 2030. And this equates to somewhere between 150 and 200 units being developed that have an affordability component across the county every single year. The cities can't do it, the county can't do it alone, the private market can't do it alone. We're going to have to partner together in order to make, to come anywhere near meeting this level of affordability. We are seeing increased demand for townhomes and small lots of family development, but in Anoka County, the availability of this product is pretty limited. Developers, we're really seeing a trend of wanting to increase production in the luxury townhome market and the small lot development, which helps you bring households into the community, but it does not close this affordability gap. Layer on all of that, the aging baby boomer generation. This is a significant cohort in Anoka County. The population is projected to continue growing, but they're starting to make different housing choices. I readily admit I'm one of those aging cohort group members, and I went from a single family home to a townhome, and then the pandemic hit, and I needed to upsize because I was working from home and the grandchild that lives with me was doing distance learning. But I'm really ready to go back down again. So we have to keep paying attention to the senior group and the baby boomer generation because they're driving a lot of the production that's being done out there. They want the luxury features. They like the ability to not have to mow your lawn and do the driveway maintenance. And they're willing to do that trade-off on a mortgage payment and pay higher rents to do this. In the for sale home area, the median resale price in the Twin Cities for a single family home in 2023 was just over $416,000. That was up 46% from 2018. Anoka County had the second lowest median resale price in the metro area at $378,000. The time on market for properties continues to be counted in days rather than months. They're still selling out there very quickly, even though interest rates have been increasing. It's new construction that's really becoming unaffordable to many of our starter families. And by construction in the Twin Cities area, single family homes at a price point under $500,000. We use Maxfield Research to do this study. We had them take a look at a lot of different things. We did the housing population, household employment growth, a lot of different factors. I don't think this slide is in the presentation. Okay. It didn't come out of mine when I did it. But we wanted to talk a little bit about all the different information we brought in. We looked at five-year projections. We looked at the current housing stock. We looked at trends. I think Alex and I could have probably put our presentations together and covered half of each other's talking points. But what we were really looking for was some ways to move the needle a little bit and to be able to make some recommendations to help do that. We can tell you that our demographic projections are continued growth between now and 2030 of about 8.7% and about 10% growth the following decade. Blaine has been the largest city for a few years and will continue to stay there. I think it's projected to remain the largest city until about 2040. Proportional growth, though, it's kind of interesting, and your community pops up here. We're looking at not just the households in your community, but the number of people living there, and we're also looking at how doubled-up families and multifamily has been growing. And Hilltop, Ramsey, St. Francis, and Lionel Lakes all had maybe more household growth in numbers than what may have actually been a for sale property. That did not come out sounding very clear at all, and I'm so sorry about that. But it means that the growth has been really high here, and Maxfield could not go back and track it off in a pattern that completely matches up with what your permit growth was. So we know that there's other factors at play here. We know that there's doubling up. We know that there's been a lot of multifamily housing that happened in this 13-year span between the time our studies were done. And you may not have been the largest city in population, but you grew faster than Blaine did. That's what I was trying to say, and it took me a long time to get there. I'm so sorry. For household growth in between 2010 and 2020, I'm going to skip this one. It's very repetitive, but I just meant it's actually not in your presentation. The average household size nationally is very close to what it is here in the metro area. We are a little bit larger. I think our average population here in Anoka County is 2.8 people per household, and in the metro area it's 2.55 people, and slightly higher nationwide. We have very young families in Anoka County that are starting to become a bigger cohort and are very, very rapidly exceeding the baby boomer generation. So they also are a market that you really need to help find the housing for, because they want very different things from what the boomer generation wants. And this younger generation really likes new things. So we have to figure out if we can help them find a way to get that new stuff, but it has to be within their price point. So that's a big challenge. Single-family housing development will attract slightly larger households. Once again, these younger families want four bedrooms. Somebody's got to produce them. Household income in Anoka County is estimated to continue to climb. As I said earlier, we're hovering around $90,000 a year right now. We expect by 2030, the average household income will be about $106,000. Household income will peak when people are in their late 40s, early 50s. And we found that a lot of people, 89% of the Anoka County residents, didn't move in the last year. We're not as mobile as we think we are. Once you have that home and you've got children and they're in the school districts, which is our greatest projection tool for looking at household size, people tend to stay put. If they are in Anoka County, they stay. Of the people that moved, 5.4% moved away from Anoka County but stayed in Minnesota. And a lot of our residents moved from one area of Anoka County to another area. It is our youngest family member, or those younger families that are the most active in moving. They move around several times typically, and then they stop moving at about age 75. Talked a little bit about the public school enrollment already.
Which
is very slow. Just gonna skip ahead a couple here to stay on time here. Same slide and twice to catch up for the next presentation. Our employment trends. 2010, Anoka County had approximately 110,000 jobs. This number decreased during the recession and pandemic. It is, however, increasing again and has rebounded. So we went in 2000 from 110,000 jobs to a low of 106,000. We are now back up above that 2000 number at about 113,000 jobs. We know that there were record numbers of unemployment claims filed in the spring of 2020. That should be a surprise to anyone. Lockdown required non-essential people to stay home, and the workforce changed forever, probably. But we have seen that number rebound now with employment increasing by 15% over the last 2 years.
I have a question.
Yes.
Is there like a heat map or something that can be shown to show kind of how jobs were distributed in 2000 and how they've maybe changed in that 20-year period? Like, for example, were there a lot of jobs in Fridley and Columbia Heights and that area, and now they've moved out to Blaine and Ramsey? Be kind of just a curious thing I'd have in some interest in.
That's a really good question. I can see if I can get you a map that would identify that. We do know that there are five cities that have most of the jobs in Anoka County. 75% of all Anoka County jobs are located in Coon Rapids, Blaine, Fridley, Anoka, and Ramsey. You are the employment base. We expect that in the future, 66% of new jobs will also occur in these same five cities. My guess is that heat map is not going to show a great migration of jobs, but it may reinforce that you're right on track for what you should be doing. We do know that the ultra-low unemployment rates are very indicative of the labor shortages that continue out there. And that just puts added pressure on what the wages are for people working here. We get to the fun part now, the actual recommendations for Ramsey. Again, take these, use them as you want. We think that it's really helpful to have some kind of a map for everybody. But you are a growth community here in Anoka County, both in jobs and in housing. You have a diverse housing stock. Your community is projected to increase the household base by over 2,000 people between 2020 and 2030. That means an additional 2,000 households, 2,000 additional households will be added in the following decade. So we're encouraging you to look at a variety of housing products to meet the demand. We know that right now for for sale housing, we have about 131 vacant lots that can be developed, and we've got about 660 future lots that could be developed for single family homes. We estimate about 919 single family and 306 only multifamily units are needed to meet demand by 2030. Big numbers. On the rental housing side, there is demand for about 695 rental units between now and 2030. Your new rental units that have been constructed have been very well received and have been leasing up very quickly. We expect the very low vacancy rates to continue because there's been such high demand for rental units, especially those that have an affordability component. Senior housing demand, we've been tracking separately from general occupancy. So senior housing demand, we're showing an active adult unit pent-up demand of about 320 units. Active seniors is what I would consider myself. I'm still going to work. I'm still out shopping. I drive my car many places. But there's also a need for about 400 service-enriched units. That would be your assisted living units, your memory care, something where it's likely that senior is giving up their car. They're not as independent. They're more reliant on family and friends. And a lot of services start to be fed into these types of units.
Can I ask a question on this? So in your first bullet, you say rental housing demand for 695 rental units. Is that in addition to what we currently have? Is that?
This is additional, yes.
Okay. And then when you go to senior housing demand, that is not inclusive inside of that 695.
Correct.
It's addition to the 695.
Correct.
Wow. Okay.
They're very big numbers.
I see it as the 321 plus the 405 plus,
yes,
695.
Yes. Yeah. There's a need for both active and service enriched units. And we really recommend, and this is a fairly consistent recommendation, right now, we're really recommending to focus in on those active adults, whether it's owned or rented. They're the ones who are driving right now. We believe that private market public market, private market will pick up a lot of the service and packages for our rental units, and we've been seeing some in the homeownership areas. But right now, we really think the short-term area to focus on is, for the seniors, is that active adult range.
Karen, has anyone started studying, you know, this is great for the next 10 years up to 2040, but what about past 2040? Now there's going to be a housing surplus. What has anyone started studying that or coming up with a plan on what to do? No.
I made a note of that. There are people are starting to talk about it, and there's a real shift in how we talk about the life of a building. Is there a second use for it? We saw it a lot during the pandemic. Can a hotel be repurposed into apartments? Can, you know, the options become unlimited? You know, can you take a townhome development and make it somehow a commercial development? That's going to be potential trends in the future. It's not being talked about a lot, but we are starting to hear, making sure that the life of a building allows for a change in the use at some point in time. It will be interesting to see how it starts to really come together and who the creative innovators are going to be here.
Any questions, Mr. Kurtz?
Back on slide 5, it's the where you were talking about how the median household income from Anoka County being $90,000 and the average wage $64,000. And I guess I just want to make sure, are we talking about the same numbers? Because it says median household income is 90, but then it said the average wage is 64. Are we measuring different numbers there?
We should not be measuring different numbers. We have to remember that many households have more than one income earner.
Right, I guess I'm just making sure, because it says household income, but then it says average wage. So is that this, because I think it's odd that those numbers are working out in that relationship. Is this why I was just kind of wondering? It's slide 5, so I was just wondering, is it measuring the same thing, or is it?
Or is it saying that most households are two-income households?
My belief is that it's trying to capture that most households are two-income households, and our wages are what's driving us.
Okay, so those two numbers are different numbers.
They're different numbers, yes. Right. They're measuring two different
numbers. Individual wages.
Okay. I just was trying to figure out if we're comparing the median to the average, because then that's weird. Or here we're measuring two different things, so that makes sense. I got it.
Okay.
Any more questions?
I have a quick question. Slide 3 talks about rental units in rural areas. Typically, you don't see rental units in rural areas. Are you talking about like an apartment building in a rural area? Or are you talking just like rental homes? I mean, it just seems like the product for an apartment is more metro, more downtown.
Excellent question. It's a little bit of both. There really is a need for some apartment-style buildings in more rural areas. And, you know, I consider that to be kind of the top third of Anoka County. We have tried for a long time to get a project put together in Linwood Township. It's really, really hard to make a cash flow. But there's demand there. There is a lot of demand for it. So what ends up happening is the people who are likely candidates for that smaller apartment building are moving to neighboring communities that actually have that product. So in Linwood, they're moving to Forest Lake or somewhere in Washington County. But people also tend to make decisions based on where their families are. So it is an unmet need here in Anoka County. We just haven't been able to adequately fill it. We've tried many, many times and haven't come up with the right formula. We're currently looking now at a model that's not the 50 units that in the past as a county. That is a good number, similar to what we've done here in Savannah Oaks. It doesn't work in Linwood or East Bethel or St. Francis. We need to be able to find a way to develop smaller units, probably in the 8 to 12 unit range, and construction costs are very high. we haven't been able to find the formula yet, but we are still working on it because we know it is an unmet need.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Once we have this study finalized, we've sent it out to all the city staff to look at it, find any typos, errors, things they don't agree with. I've taken a couple notes. We will do a final version that will be available on our website, and we will make the final version available to your staff as well. Use it with developers, use it with any presentations you want to pull numbers from. It's yours to use at that point.
Thank you. Okay, moving on. Case number three is consider economic development manager request to interview and serve on the CMAC board of directors.
I'll open this. Of course, Mr. Sullivan's here to answer any questions on how the relationship works, but you know, ultimately, Sean has been approached by CMDC a couple times over in recent years to apply, interview, and potentially serve on the board of directors. Initially when he brought this forward to Community Development Director Hansen and myself, kind of, you know, we, of course, looked at the number one question was, is there a conflict of interest? Ultimately, you know, we don't believe that there is. We even ran past City Attorney Knock. He agreed there's no conflict of interest. But given the fact that Ramsey has a relationship and we work with CMDC to underwrite some of our loans and our EDA assistant packages, we felt like we should just at least bring it to council, make sure none of you are overly concerned. Mr. Sullivan kind of laid out in the case of, you know, what's that process look like if the City of Ramsey is sending a project to CMDC, and, you know, ultimately it would be one where, like, you guys might have to do is abstain if there's a conflict or a connection between the two, or you sitting on council and the decision being made. So, again, in summary, no general feeling that there's a conflict of interest, and if there is an overlap of Ramsey duties versus CMDC board duties, there's the opportunity to abstain from votes. And other high level, in Sean's role, there's an opportunity to understand more of what someone like CMDC looks at when reviewing development financials and things of that nature, just make him stronger in his role here for Ramsey. So with that, turn over to council for any questions, or Sean has anything high level to add?
Mr. Riley?
I don't see it as a conflict. Like you said, you just not vote on something that has to do with Ramsey. And it seems like something that Mr. Sullivan will get a lot of experience. And it also puts us, gives us a seat at a table that we're already kind of utilizing some of the services there also. So I think that's a good idea.
Do we have a disclaimer in there that says they can't poach you?
Sure. I promise to stay.
It's a gentleman's agreement.
Yeah, I know. Go ahead.
Ms. Carl?
Thank you. I just have a quick question. If you can tell us some of the other members of the board, what their jobs are. I think from the case, this is a non-paying board member, correct?
Mr. Ray? Go ahead. Councilmember Musgrove. Yeah, there's real estate agents on the board. There's bankers on the board in the past and currently right now, former city administrators on the board. You know, people that are just around the development world. So, you know, we as, you know, non-banker members, if I were to be selected to be on that board, you know, are going to have write-ups in loan write-ups coming from bankers, and we're going to be reviewing them through an eyes. I'll be reviewing it through an eyes of an economic development person. You may have a realtor on there looking at it through kind of talking about the job market and maybe saying, you know, seeing a lot of these properties right now are pretty risky, vacancies are high, you know, do we really want to look at deals like that? But, I mean, I think Brian framed it really well. You know, this is something that I've really wanted to do for a while. And, you know, I've been on an EDAM board, you know, or as a school board member or a city council member, and I really haven't felt that I've been able to give the time, even though it's not a lot. But I didn't want to spread myself too thin. But now I do have some time, and I look at it as almost a professional development type opportunity for me. I again appreciate the opportunity to apply. Just because I apply doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to get the position, but they have asked me on a number of occasions asking me to consider it because they thought it'd be a good addition to their board. We've done a lot of work with them when Brian talked about underwriting of loans and things like that. So I think they do. They're a wonderful company. They're local. They originally were based out of Coon Rapids when they started. They're now based in Andover. Previous CDCs, they used to be limited to a geographical area, but there were some changes in SBA and such that made them be, frankly, larger area lenders, not restricted to geographical areas. So, again, they may see a deal that is outside of Anoka County, and frankly, you know, be aware of something that's happening adjacent, not just in our neighborhood. I think it's beneficial for my position. So, not that I'm a spy by any means, but just having more information, you know, knowledge is power.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, I think it potential benefits, and I trust and believe that Sean will just recuse himself when it comes to any conflict of interest. Right, Sean?
Absolutely.
Right, we have consensus.
Thank you. Wish me luck. I'm going to interview at some point now.
Okay. Good luck. All right, so case number four is to a continuation of nuisance code. I'm going to ask that we table this and come. We got a short meeting today, that we come back afterwards to go through this and try to wrap this up.
I'm okay with that. You think we can wrap it up, or just spend a little time, or whatever time is needed?
I'm keeping it short.
Mr. Mayor and Council, you know, this is really one of those where we've attempted to get through this twice already, and we do have some other code changes, subdivision code, sign that are coming down the pipeline, that it's just looking at our future topics. It'd be nice to just get this thing wrapped up. And I think with what's attached tonight, staff really simplified it down to focus on those sections that, at least at the staff level, feel like need to be looked at and cleaned up, more or less. Not necessarily a super exhaustive review of it, but so staff would love to get it done.
All right, well, I will adjourn our meeting. See everybody down at
reconvene
after council is over.